You're listening to the Vibrant Happy Women Podcast, episode number 141. We're talking all about choosing to see the good. This is so important in our families and in our lives, because when we see the good, we have more dopamine, more serotonin, more endorphins, and more joy. Stay tuned. Hi, I'm Dr. Jen Ryday, former burned out mom of six turned happiness whisperer. And I'm here to help you get off that hamster wheel and make time for yourself without the guilt, so you can live a balanced, calm, heart-centered life. With over 2.5 million downloads, this is the Vibrant Happy Women Podcast. Hey, my friends, welcome back to Vibrant Happy Women. I'm Dr. Jen Ryday, and I'm here to help you choose happiness, to take your power back and no longer have to say, hey, I'll be happy when XYZ, or when my husband does such and such, I'll be happy, or when my teenager finally starts acting kind. You know, all of these excuses we give ourselves. But in the end, this show is all about grabbing your happiness by the horns and saying, hey, we're riding out, we're heading out on the trail, and we're going to be happy right now, no matter what's happening around us. And I hope you like my analogy, because I like analogies lately. Well, anyway, I want to share our review of the week from Amber Fitfox, and she wrote, I found Jen's podcast a year ago when I was in a place of feeling overwhelmed and tired. I so related to Jen's personal story of overwhelm and felt like I was hanging out with girlfriends when I listened to her podcast. With all the things I have learned from her podcast and Time Mastery for Women, I feel like I'm in a much better place in life. I recommend the Vibrant Happy Women podcast to every woman I know. Amber, thank you so much for leaving that review. I really appreciate it. I love validation as much as the next girl. And everyone else listening, if you receive any value at all from the Vibrant Happy Women podcast, do me a favor and go to jenryday.com/iTunes, I-T-U-N-E-S, and leave your review. I just might read it on the air. Now, before we dive into this week's episode, I want to tell you about something very, very special that I released just last week, but it's not over. It is a 3-part video training all about increasing your self-love. Why self-love? Listen, all the success that you need or want in your life starts with loving yourself, knowing your value on this planet, your value in this universe, your value in your relationships, but knowing it for yourself, no longer needing to get that validation, no longer needing other people to tell it to you, but to know it from the inside out. When you have that, every single desire you have for your life starts to be realized. When you love yourself, it's easier to have a healthy body because you'll eat healthier foods and you won't sabotage yourself. When you love yourself, you can show up in your relationships from a position of strength rather than being needy for that approval or needy for that appreciation. You come into the relationship giving and feeling good already, taking charge of that. When you love yourself, you realize you're here on this planet, on this earth, to make a contribution. And you can show up and do so with confidence, not doubting or worrying that you're not good enough, not wondering if there's something else you should be doing because your neighbor Betsy is doing that one thing and your other neighbor Sarah, she's really fit. You can get clear on what your purpose is on this earth, how you're going to grow, how you're going to contribute. Oh, all of it feels so amazing. But we have to go back to the beginning and learn to love ourselves. Learn to understand, hey, what is important to me? What value do I bring to the show? What gifts and talents do I have? How did my upbringing influence how I show up in the world today? Who do I need to forgive so that I can truly show up with a position of strength and let my light shine for everyone around me? Healing your heart is a part of this self-love journey. Anyway, I want you to check out my video training. It's free. I created it for you. It is not live. It's pre-recorded, so you can watch it at any time. All you have to do is go to jenryday.com/loveyourself. In the training, I talk about why a journey of self-love led me to this podcast. I share some stories of some of the women who I have witnessed on their own journey of healing their hearts and building self-love and how they have changed. And you'll learn some of the steps for that process, the blueprint, if you will. So definitely go check it out. I think you'll love it. I think it will enrich your life and give you some ideas on extending what you've learned on this podcast and enjoying your journey of self-love, your journey of healing your heart so you can show up strong and joyous and full of light for your family, for your loved ones, for yourself, making a difference and feeling so good, getting that sparkle back. It all starts with self-love. So again, go check out that video. It is free. It is at jenriday.com/loveyourself. All right, for today's show, we are talking all about seeing the good. When a tragedy strikes, sometimes life spirals down, 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 and we don't know how to get out of that pit. But there is a way out to find that joy. And our guests, plural, our guests, Lisa and her husband, Scott McGrath, are talking about that in this episode, talking about the tragedy they both endured, which was, wow, a tearjerker, and then where they are today, how they turned that tragedy into a really amazing blessing for themselves, for their children. And I love their story. You're going to love it too, especially, you know, to have Lisa and her husband together. It's so fun to hear them talk as a couple. So that is our episode for today. And I want to go ahead and jump right into that because it was so much fun to talk to them. Let's dive in. I'm talking with Lisa McGrath today, and she's primarily a stay-at-home mom of 5 busy kids, part-time mammographer at her local hospital, and most recently, the author of her first published book, The Journey Between Us. Her book tells the story of how her faith not only helped her overcome the trials and tragedy in her life, but also grew tremendously as she learned to trust God's plan and perfect timing. In her free time, she enjoys exercising, cooking, and baking, attending children's activities, and being involved in numerous women's groups, and spending time with family and friends. Lisa is married to Scott, who is also going to be on the show today. And they live in Kansas. Scott is the president of his family-owned publishing company. And when he's not managing numerous parts of their small organization, he's attending or coaching his kids' activities or enjoying a number of outdoor activities such as hunting, fishing, biking, skiing. Wow, you are outdoorsy, Scott. He feels blessed that Lisa and his paths crossed 10 years ago. Being a blended, busy family of 7, they never see a dull moment, but they wouldn't have it any other way. I want to welcome you both to the show. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Jen, it's an honor to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, this is great. And Scott, don't be shy. Let's hear your voice.
Thanks for letting me get involved.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did it. I mean, it probably sounds really intimidating to be interviewed on Vibrant Happy Women, but you're not the first man who's been on the show. So thanks for doing this.
Well, thank you for having me.
So let's start out with each of your favorite quotes, and then we're going to go into your story. And everyone listening out there, it's such a cool story. I'll just preface it that way. But Scott, let's start with you. What is your favorite quote you want to share today?
Oh, wow. I got to begin. I don't know. First things that pop into my mind, about the time Lisa and I met, I just kind of always went with live each day one day at a time, and also just kind of live more is always pretty much what I've always gone by.
Ooh, I love that. Live more. So like no excuses, no regrets.
That's right.
Oh, that's good. How about you, Lisa?
Well, this is a tough question for me because I struggle with favorites. I have a hard time pinning down one favorite anything. And so I often have multiple favorites. And so I hope it's okay, but I have to share 2 quotes that came to mind because I could not decide which one I liked better. But the first quote, and I use it in my book, and it kind of is a center for my life, is actually from the Bible, and it's Nehemiah 8:10, and it says, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." And then the second quote is something that a friend and actually a fellow Vibrant Happy Woman Club member of mine shared a while back when we were talking. And she commented the following Swedish proverb. She said, "Worry shared is halved and joy shared is doubled." And I have just used that and reflected on that so much since hearing her say that.
Ooh, that's cool. So explain how it helps you in your life, that one. Worry shared is halved and joy shared is doubled.
Right. So I am very passionate about people not only sharing their story, but sharing their joys and also sharing their struggles, their worries. And that quote just reiterates to me that, especially like in the setting that we have with our women's groups that we meet with, when we get together and we share our struggles and we share our worries, it's as if they diminish. But then when we turn around and we share our joys, we're just all so happy for each other. And it just doubles. And that is just such a wonderful thing to see.
Yeah, like community, I guess, friendship. It's so important.
Exactly. You just feel so loved and supported no matter what, whether you're having struggles or whether you're having joys. The nice thing is for the struggles to feel lesser and the joys to feel more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's go all the way to your struggles. I mentioned in the bio that you shared with me that, you know, you've had some struggles. So
yes,
Lisa, kind of take us back to what happened for you and Scott and how the two of you met. This is a long story, but I bet you've shared it before and you probably have all the nuances, you know, figured out how to tell it in what order. But I can't wait to share this with our listeners.
Sure. Well, and, you know, we do like sharing our story. You know, I read a book in the last year that really encouraged people to share their story, no matter where they feel like they are at in their life. By sharing your story, it can be healing for you, but it can also help other people just to feel like they relate or that they're not alone or just to be inspired. And I guess I'll start back with where struggles first started to come into play in my life. I really feel like growing up and then as I went through school and college, I didn't really feel like I struggled per se with a whole lot. And so I felt like, you know, life was just pretty good. I kind of had these visions and goals for my life that, you know, I wanted to go to college, get a degree, find a husband, get married, have kids. That was kind of my, you know, dreams and goals for my life. So I kind of did that, kind of checked those off my list as I went. I went to college, got the degree, got a good job, met a nice man, got married. And then the first struggle I was faced with was I had a miscarriage. My very first pregnancy ended in miscarriage. And that was really hard because you find out that something you want is there and you feel like it's within reach and then it's like it's taken away. And so that is very difficult to deal with. But fortunately, I was able to overcome that. And we were able then to have a successful pregnancy and our son was born. And not long after, well, I guess he was about a year and a half, and a job opportunity came up for me near where I grew up in a small Western Kansas town. And so the opportunity to live near my family again was very appealing to me. So my husband and I decided that we would move there so that we could be closer to family and raise our children close to family. And while we were living and working in that community, we decided that we were ready to add to our family. We then spent 2.5 years trying to conceive with no luck. And that became really the second struggle that I would say that I was faced with in my life. We did finally decide to seek fertility treatment, and that did in fact work. And so I did become pregnant, and we had found out that it was going to be a little girl. So we were really excited about that. And because our first child was a boy and our second child was going to be a girl, some friends of mine wanted to throw a baby shower for me. And so we went and had this wonderful baby shower, and I got all these fun little things for this for a little girl. And then as we were leaving to travel back to where we lived, which was about 24 miles away from where the baby shower was located, we were involved in an accident. I was actually 8 months pregnant at the time, and our son was 4. And we actually were traveling on a highway, and there was a deer standing in the road, and the car coming toward us hit the deer, and the deer flew through our windshield, injuring my husband very badly. It was then a very difficult situation that I found myself in because the impact of the deer did not stop the vehicle. The vehicle continued to travel, even though I was not aware at the time that it was still moving because I was so shocked by the actual impact of the accident. But realizing that my husband was unconscious, that I needed to figure out how to stop this runaway vehicle, I was able to eventually get the vehicle stopped. And then from there, move on to calling emergency personnel and getting an ambulance there for my husband. Unfortunately, my husband passed away. The impact of the accident was too great, and he suffered a very tremendous head and neck injury, and he passed away. And I found myself a widowed single mom, pregnant and with a 4-year-old son. Mm. And yeah. So that became obviously the most monumental struggle that I had been faced with up to that point in my life.
So Lisa, walk us through the next week, the next 2 weeks, just kind of the feelings you had at that moment. I've heard it's very numbing, or maybe it's after 2 weeks when it gets even more numb because people forget about you. What was that like to be struggling so much emotionally and you're pregnant and this horrible thing just happened? What were your feelings through that time?
Yeah, numb is a really good word to use. At first, obviously, I was in shock. I didn't really even know how to feel. It just felt like I was just in this horrible nightmare that I wished I could have just, you know, woken up from. It was just very difficult. You know, it seems like the time from when someone passes away up to the time of the funeral, you're in such limbo because there's always something to do. You know, you have to plan the funeral and then there's always family coming and things like that. So you feel mm-hmm. like your life just kind of in limbo. And And you really don't have a lot of time to really process what is actually going on, you know? And so all of that took place and I just tried to go through the motions and get all of that done because you just kind of want, you know,
closure.
To almost feel like you have some closure. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so then, you know, I found myself, you know, once we got, made it through that and then there was a funeral and then it's like, now what do I do? You know, I had no idea what to do. I was so lost. I was broken. I didn't even know what to do. Mm-hmm. The pain is almost indescribable. I don't even really know how to describe the pain. I think it's one of those things that unless you've experienced it, you can't know, you know, unless you've gone through what someone else has gone through or you can't know exactly what they're going through.
No way. Right.
So it's hard to describe, but it was very numbing and it was just very, very difficult. And so, yeah, the first few weeks I was kind of in a daze. I was kind of in my own world. I was trying to survive. I was trying to get through the days. And, you know, thankfully I had family close by and, you know, I had my son and I had my pregnancy and those things kind of kept me going, but it was very, very difficult. And the pain was hard to describe.
Wow. That's horrible. I'm so sorry. I'm sure you've heard that so many times, but I'm just so sorry you had all that pain.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to go back to Scott's story in just a minute, but fast forward to, you know, how you met Scott.
Well, I like to joke now that we met on the internet because the way it came about is that my first husband, his name was Jason, and his sister was also pregnant at the time. And so she and I would visit frequently after Jason passed away. He was her only sibling. And so it was very difficult for her as well. But regardless, we were both pregnant and due around the same time. So we would visit frequently and just kind of, you know, try to encourage one another and be there for one another. And a couple weeks after Jason passed away, Linda called me one day and she was very upset. She had received word that one of her good friends from college, her name was Carrie, had passed out at home in her bathroom and her husband had found her unconscious and not breathing. And they were able to revive her at the time. But when she called me, she had told me that they had flown her to a larger facility in order to, you know, improve her chances of survival, but they didn't think it looked good. And I just remember being so completely devastated for this man. And I told her, you know, just keep me posted. And then a couple of weeks later, she called me to let me know that her friend had passed away. And she had told me that, you know, she was very worried about her friend's husband and their two children. They had two children, a 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and how worried she was for them. And, you know, something just, I think because of everything everyone had done for me in my time of need and my time of loss, I just felt compelled. I felt called to reach out to this man and send him a sympathy card. And so that's exactly what I did. I got his name and address from my sister-in-law, and I wrote him a sympathy card. And I just explained to him that, you know, I felt horrible for him and that we were traveling this path along, you know, at the same time. And that, you know, I didn't know how he felt, but I could relate. And I invited him to contact me if he ever felt like talking to someone who was maybe going through some of the same situations. And a couple weeks later, I received an email from him. And that is how Scott and I first met.
Okay, so you met over the internet.
Yeah, exactly.
So much more. So much more.
We met over the internet. Yeah, that's the easy way of putting it.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, well, first off, Lisa, how many weeks was that after Jason's death that you sent this card?
Jason passed away July 30th of 2008. And Linda would have called me around August 15th, somewhere in there. So a couple weeks later is when she first called me when Carrie had her episode. And then Carrie actually passed away on August 29th. So one day shy of a month from when Jason passed away.
Whoa, that's so weird.
Yeah, yeah. And then I would have sent the card a couple weeks later because the first time Scott emailed me was on September 22nd.
Wow, you still remember. That's crazy.
Well, I just wrote a book and put it in the book. So.
Okay. Okay. So thanks for sharing that, Lisa. I know it's hard to be so vulnerable, but we appreciate you painting that picture for us so we can feel a small portion of what you felt there.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
So Scott, let's hear your story, however you want to tell it.
Okay. Well, I guess I, you know, kind of from the beginning, I never really had many challenges thinking back on my life, I just kind of did kind of that live more kind of attitude and did things as I felt comfortable with. And I lived in a lot of places. I think I went to about 3 different colleges before I finally got a bachelor's degree. But I just lived in Colorado, did the things I wanted to do as a young man. And Carrie and I, we started dating in college when I came to move back to Kansas from Colorado and met her in one of my classes. And we started dating. Actually, that didn't go very long. And then about a few months later, met up again walking down through the quad of campus and decided we would try it again. So we kind of met up. And as we dated the second time around, we grew quite close. And we actually found out we would be having a child together. So through that, we had our son Benton and got married that same year and never really looked at it as a challenge, just looked at everything that it like this was what it was meant to be. And we had our daughter Lillian then. And so probably about the time Lillian was 2. So Carrie had episodes where she kind of felt like she was blacking out. And then they got to where they were, she was having fainting spells. And there were just probably about 5 of those episodes. And finally, we decided we'd probably try a different facility in Kansas City and see if we could figure things out. About probably we had celebrated, would have been our 6th wedding anniversary. We came back from it, and about probably 10 days later, I was trying to go into the bathroom and she had fainted again, and this time did not have a pulse and wasn't breathing. And so tried to do CPR and had to wait for EMTs to come and assist there, and then we're able to revive her. But started to learn a lot during that moment about how long what your body goes through at those times and stuff. And once we battled about a week trying to, well, about 4 days, finally got a report from neurologists because of hypoxia to the brain. We weren't able to, there probably would be less than a 1% chance that she would ever have a quality of life like she had. So we had to make a quality of life decision and removed her from life support. I always kind of, around that time was to be our daughter's 3rd birthday. And Carrie was pretty big into that, even still had the invitations in her purse when I had taken her purse to Kansas City with me. And Lillian's birthday would have been August 23rd or 22nd. And we celebrated her birthday and Carrie hung on till August 29th. So I always kind of say, well, she wasn't going to miss that 3-year-old's birthday. But so we sat a long time and during that time with her struggling, moving forward. And so, yeah, we then came home and I always just remember one of the doctors there telling me to go home and just keep everything the same routine. And I remember just kind of looking at him and giving that look like, how is this ever going to be the same routine anymore? So, so I was a single dad taking care of a 7-year-old son starting 2nd grade and taking a 3-year-old daughter and those struggles. And yeah, like Lisa jokes about meeting over the internet, but it was pretty much a card that changed my life. I actually didn't have any at that time, had removed employees from my office where I was at in Hayes. We have multiple other offices, but I just kind of stayed in there always myself. And I opened up the card at my desk and read it. And actually, kind of to rewind a bit, I didn't know Jason and I didn't know Lisa. I knew Linda because of college. And I was actually told about Jason's death the night before Carrie's episode. She had came into our living room and told me about the accident and about how, and she knew Jason and they were friends and told me about it. And we actually had visited a little bit about things like that and didn't realize the next day I would be faced with those challenges. So I felt a connection right away to Lisa, and she had her email address put on that letter. And I just emailed her that day right then and just started communicating after that.
So it's such a miracle story in some way. I mean, a miracle out of a tragedy, a double tragedy, horrible. So you're a single dad and I can imagine you're completely overwhelmed. But tell us some of the thoughts you had as your son starting school and you have this daughter and you still have to maintain this business. I mean, if you can, how did you feel inside? You know, I can't imagine.
You know, that numb feeling like Lisa mentioned, overwhelmed. I actually just kind of fortunate enough that I was able to step back a little bit because of my father, and I had explained that to him. I told him all and employees that don't expect much from me right now. And So I will take care of some things, but I will let you know when I am uncomfortable and don't want to take care of that. And so everybody that, you know, they are, you know, small company. So that's nice because it's like a big family. So,
yeah.
And, but yeah, it was hard.
Yeah. Well, so you open the card and there's this woman reaching out. What were your thoughts? You know, oh, wow, someone gets this. This is probably the only person on the planet that probably gets it a little bit, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, you feel connected. You feel like, I mean, you do. You feel alone, and then you finally have somebody there to. And probably the first two things I did was cried, but then also there was a check there for a memorial. So then I felt like, boy, I better write a check then. But but it was just kind of.
did you write a check back to Lisa then?
Yeah, I think we kind of did. I mean, like, well, what was something special to Jason? So
that's so great.
So actually, I kind of donated back into my. Now my kids is college funds. And
stuff. That's so funny.
But yeah, I mean, it was just, and it's always kind of felt that way. It was, you know, it was like, wow, there's only one other person in this world now that I can relate to, communicate with. And it was kind of just that, you know, meeting on a lonely dirt road and there's somebody, you know, to kind of hold your hand kind of feeling, and didn't know each other at all, but our emails seemed, you know, I think right then, just that day, I think we emailed each other about 3 or 4 times that day.
Oh, that's such a good story. Well, Lisa, let's jump back to you. What was it like to have a courtship that was also doubled as grieving time, you know, because you were essentially each other's shoulders to cry on, but also became a courtship. So what did that look like?
Yeah, well, it was a little awkward at times, to say the least, because you start to have these feelings and you just question them. You know, we questioned ourselves constantly because, first of all, before we even met and our spouse has passed away, I mean, we felt like life had ended, basically. Like, you love this person so much, and then all of a sudden they're gone, and you think, oh, I'll never love anyone again, or I'll never love anyone the way I loved this person. And so, you know, at first when we met and became friends, it was such an amazing feeling because we considered each other friends, and we had this connection of being able to talk about anything and everything and be there for each other because we felt like no one else really understood. And so it really did start out as a friendship, but then the feelings were almost awkward because you were like, where are these feelings coming from? You know, it's like we almost tried to talk ourselves out of the feelings because we felt uncomfortable. We felt like, first of all, we felt it was too soon, and we worried about what would people think. And we questioned, are these feelings actually genuine, or are these feelings trying to fill a void? And so we just questioned ourselves constantly until, you know, we finally just decided there's no rule book for this. You know, no one ever wrote a book on how we're supposed to cope with this tragedy, how we're supposed to cope with this grief. And if we're truly having these genuine feelings for one another, are we supposed to ignore them, or are we supposed to act on them? And so we just felt, you know, the whole time we felt like it was just divinely guided, that, you know, God had brought us together, had crossed our paths, that this horrible tragedy, although, you know, it was awful, you know, for whatever reason, our paths crossed. And so we just, you know, at one point we just decided that we just needed to embrace it. But it was awkward because dating is just, it can just be awkward, especially when you're 30. And for me, a mom of 4 and a baby, I mean, I had a baby. And so it was a little bit awkward. But yet on the flip side, when we were together, it was so comfortable. Like it was not uncomfortable at all. The connection was just, again, I use the word indescribable, but it just kind of is.
So what was it like to tell your families that you had decided to connect and maybe even date and all of that?
Well, as with a lot of things, I think the anticipation was the worst, you know, just wondering, how are they going to react? What are they going to say? But honestly, my parents and Scott's parents were relieved and very happy. They both witnessed their children be in such horrible pain that, you know, as a parent, you can't hardly stand to see your child be in pain, and you just want that pain to go away, and you want to be able to fix that for them. And so, and knowing both of our stories, and they both knew, even when we just had become friends and were talking, and they could see the change in us, that we had, you know, we had someone to visit with that understood. And they just, they saw us both get a little bit of a spark and feel hopeful again, you know? Mm. And so our families were very happy for us and very supportive. And then there came the challenge of, you know, telling Jason and Carrie's families. And we were nervous about that. But again, they were so supportive too. And just, it gives me goosebumps, honestly, to think about how supportive our families have been throughout this entire journey. I mean, it's just, it makes me emotional, but it's just the support that we received from our family was, it was just amazing. And Jason's family has welcomed Scott and his children, and Carrie's family welcomed me and my children. And honestly, we are just one huge, big, happy family. And aww, my kids have four sets of grandparents, and it's just, you know, it's just the support that we received through the entire journey has just been amazing.
Wow. Wow. Well, how long did you guys date before you decided to just jump in? I mean, there's no rule book, so no jump in, right?
Right. Well, what's funny is we both questioned back and forth that, you know, he doesn't have feelings for me, and he would question she doesn't have feelings for me. And so we had met through email in September, and then in November, actually November 16th, we met in person for the first time. Scott was traveling to Colorado for a birthday party for his grandma, and he offered to come back through where the town that I lived in and meet us. And so he and his kids and me and my kids met for the first time in November 16th.
Whoa, wait. You met each other with your kids along. Holy cow. No pressure.
Well, no pressure. Yeah. I know, right? Well, it's just, let's just put it all out there, you know?
Right, right.
Who we were at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
We were just friends. I mean, still at this point, obviously, there was no talk or even thought of anything romantic whatsoever.
Okay.
Yeah. And so this was in November. And then after that, actually, the first day that we met was November 16th. The next day, November 17th, would have been mine and Jason's 7th wedding anniversary. Mm-hmm. And so it was a very difficult day. And I just remember, you know, Scott reaching out that day to me and just giving me some encouraging words. And it just, it was nice. I felt so supported. And it was, it just helped me get through that day, honestly. Mm-hmm. And we just kept doing that for each other. We just kept providing just the right thing that one of us needed to hear, or just knowing that we weren't alone and had that support. And then, you know, by December, that was when the more we talked, and we had been able to get together a couple other times just to visit in person, that's when it started to feel like, whoa, something feels like it could be brewing here, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just came down to, I remember thinking that if he were to, I remember feeling a pang of jealousy, because I thought, well, what if he would start dating someone? Then I wouldn't have anybody to talk to that understood anymore. And I would just be devastated.
Yeah.
And so still not knowing, you know, I remember one night asking him if he'd ever thought about dating again. And he just acted like, no. And I don't know if I was just, you know, trying to get information out of him or what. I don't know what I was feeling. I still, looking back, I don't know what I was feeling or doing half the time. But yeah, I had invited him to a party there in Hayes, and he went with me. And it was funny because I took him home, and we were just sitting there in my vehicle talking, and he said, well, I better get in. And he reached over to give me a hug, and I just planted a kiss on him. I tell you what, I don't know where it came from.
Now she takes ownership of it.
I don't know where it came from, because I am not very forward like that. But and then, so I can't imagine him. It was probably a good thing it was dark, because I can't imagine the look on his face when that happened. But he left, and I drove back over to my friend's house where I was staying. And I get a phone call, and he says, can I talk to you? And I thought, oh no, here we go. I made this awkward. Now I'm going to lose his friendship. What did I do? And so I said, sure. And so he said, okay, I'll be back over there in 5 minutes. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, what is he going to say? So I go out on the driveway, and I'm waiting for him, and he pulls up, and he starts to walk toward me. And just picture this, like in a scene of a movie, and he starts to walk towards me, and, you know, by the light of the moon, and and I start to open my mouth to apologize, and he says, I can do better than that. And I'm like,
no. Way to go, Scott. Oh my gosh. Okay, keep going. This is too good.
And so he plants this like super amazing, passionate kiss on me. And oh, I'm just like melting. And I'm like, okay, well, so maybe he does have the same feelings that I do. So this is good. We're on the same page. And it just, you know, it's just one of those things. Like we were just throughout the whole entire time, we were just always on the same page. And it just looking back, obviously, it's kind of, you know, it's fun to get a little bit of humor out of it. But it just, and that was when we knew that we both had developed these, you know, these feelings more than just friendship. So really, technically, December was when we started to date. And then, you know, by that next spring, long distance relationship was really on top of, you know, everything we'd been through, the, you know, the loss and then the single parenting. Having a long distance relationship was just adding to that. It was just more stress. And so, you know, we then decided that we really had to stop and think about what we saw long term. You know, what were we going to do here? And my son was getting ready to start kindergarten. And I had decided that, you know, it would probably make more sense for me to move. For one reason, Scott had his business established. And for the other reason, I just felt like the memories that I had where I was living at the time, you know, they were with Jason and our life there. And I needed a fresh start. And so I had, you know, let Scott know that I would be willing to move my family back here. And so that's what we did. That next summer, 2009, we bought a house in the community that Scott was living in, and my kids and I moved. And then Scott then proposed to me in September of 2009. And boy, howdy, I planned a wedding in a month and we got married October 24th. So our wedding anniversary is actually coming up. So we will have been married 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you just say boy, howdy, Lisa? I like that. I like that. That's my new phrase now. Thank you. Well, okay, Scott, let's go back to you. How did you propose? What did that look like? I mean, like if you can go in the driveway and
that was
say,
a nightmare, actually.
Oh, no.
What that looked like. That was very stressful. Another challenge.
Oh, so, okay, we don't want that story. All right. So.
No, it was good.
It was?
No, it was
okay.
Quite comical, too.
Okay, let's hear it.
Because I had the, well, leading up to that, yes, we had bought a home together, and there were lots of questions about, you know, if Scott was going to ask Lisa to marry her and marry him. And so I said, and I just kind of, I don't know, it stuck with me once I read a book and during my grieving process and all that. And it was, you know, don't make any major decisions and, you know, until 1 year out. And I don't know, I always just kept saying that to myself or, you know, and that live one day at a time and do what was comfortable. And so we had bought a home together. We were living together. I, you know, in September it came along and we decided our very first kind of outing together was in Kansas City and had gone and stayed at a hotel there down on the plaza. And so I kind of thought that was kind of my time where I was like, this was going to be something serious feeling. So I thought, well, I booked actually the same room I tried and at the same hotel we stayed at for the very first time. And so I had everything planned, a ring and all that. And we get there and they overbooked the hotel. So, but they told us they'd put us in another place down in the plaza and in a much nicer place. And
oh, nice.
I didn't have to spend extra money. So we show up and bellhop comes and grabs our bags. And I really didn't give that much thought. And we went in and got our room, settled up in our room. He said he would bring the bags up. And when we got up there, just took a while for the bags to get there. Well, I got awfully nervous because I had the ring in the bag.
Oh, no.
So I paced around a lot and Lisa was getting hungry, wanting to go to dinner. And where are we going to go? And they'll just bring the bags to the room. No, we got to stay. Well, let's wait until the bags get here. So we went in or got the bags finally and still tipped the guy too. But we went down and to the plaza and in my head, I kept thinking the whole time, you know, well, I'll do it down here. I'll do it around a crowd or something. And I still just kept talking myself out of it. And we got back to the room and right then it's kind of like how Lisa's always made me feel. When it's just us and it's, you know, we're in our own little world together, it's just comfortable. There's no other place I want to be. And that's kind of what I did. I just hit one knee and I think she kind of teases me about that, but she was wondering what I was up to and she was laying on the bed and I just kind of right there and said, this is what I want. This is what I want forever. And will you marry me? And
aww.
So luckily she said yes.
Oh, that's so fun. That's so fun. Well, gosh, what a story. So what was it like to, you know, get married and then you'd already been kind of blending your families, but how did your kids handle all of this?
Is this me?
Sure. Go ahead, Scott. Yeah.
Actually, there were lots of moments that I just knew all that was going to be great and, you know, mm-hmm. work out good. I mean, ever since the Benton, when he was a second grader, had to, you know, they did a Mother's Day thing and, you know, Lisa didn't even have to be asked and she showed up. You know, we were dating. She came from her community to our community and, you know, went to his, this little second grader's birthday, you know, and he had to make her a card and he put, I love you, Lisa, you know, aww. On there, and, you know, and all the other kids have mom and things, but, you know, the kids, they just, and I think it helped, you know, of course, Lindsay at the time was a baby, but Jaron, he, you know, it always sticks with me to this day that, you know, when we were getting dressed for the wedding and we involved our kids in the wedding and they were our, you know, ushers and ring bearers and things like that. And all of them were involved. And, you know, he just kind of looks at me in the mirror and he goes, after today, do I call you dad?
Oh,
I was like, yep, you do. You can if you want. And he was like, yeah, yeah. And it's just our family just, I mean, right then it just blended together. And I don't think anybody's ever thought different. We're just, you know, all love each other. And mm-hmm. that's how it was to be.
Oh, that's awesome. And Lisa, how have both of you honored, you know, Jason and Carrie and honored their memories as you continue to go forward as a blended family?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, we've always made it a point to not avoid it. Obviously, we talk about them. And since we do have such a good relationship with Carrie's parents and Jason's parents, I mean, it's just, it's always talked about. And, you know, there for a while, we would release balloons on their birthdays and things like that. But, you know, we have some pictures, but we also just, we know that life went on and we had to do what we had to do for our family. And so we don't mm-hmm. dwell on it. And we don't, you know, we've learned that we don't look at the memories and be sad. We look at the memories and be happy. And mm-hmm. so that's kind of what our kids do too. And they have pictures. And I think sometimes they wonder, you know, what might've been because they were so little, you know, Benton was 7 and Jaron was 4 and they remember some things. Lillian was, well, she was just turning 3. So she doesn't remember a whole lot. And obviously Lindsay doesn't know any different, but you know, I think as they've gotten older, they've had more questions and they've wondered. And so we don't avoid it. You know, they have every right to know and remember and know what kind of people their, you know, mom and dad were. And, you know, and luckily a lot of times I think their grandparents talk about them and it's just, we use it as, you know, remembering is a happy thing. Remembering is not a sad thing. And it just, we try to encourage them to feel blessed that we have the family we have because they kind of do remember what it was like to, you know, have that single parent situation at the time. And so we try and just be thankful mm-hmm. that our paths did cross and we were able to blend our family. And so, yeah, but we do, we remember them, you know, their memory is, they live on through the children and through pictures and through stories. And so.
That's so good. And how old are your kids now? I know you have another one too. Yeah.
Yes, yes, we did. That is a whole nother story in of itself. But now our kids are, Benton is 17 and he's a senior and Jaron is 14 and he's a freshman and Lillian is 13. She's in 7th grade. Lindsay is 10 and she's in 4th grade. And then Lacey is actually Scott and my daughter together and she is 4. So.
What's that like? You know, you have a couple of kids who are yours genetically, some that, you know, do you ever look at them and say, oh, they got better genetics? I like Carrie's genetics better. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, sometimes we joke. I mean, maybe it's not nice, but sometimes we joke that the undesirable genetic qualities are from, you know, Jason or Carrie.
That's funny.
No, it's all in.
And sometimes we take ownership of it.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, sometimes right. we do take ownership. Sometimes it's very, very blatantly obvious, but.
Right.
But yeah, it's, You know, blended families have their challenges. Mm-hmm. All families have their challenges, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that as parents, we read more into it than what the kids do. You mm-hmm. know, I think especially as a mom, I've spent a lot of time worrying about treating everyone fairly and equally and making sure that no one felt less loved or more loved or, you know, I've put a lot of pressure on myself for that. And especially in the beginning, but you know, what I finally decided is, you know, love is not one size fits all. You know, just because I didn't give birth to two of these children, I still love them with, you know, all of my being. And it's just a different kind of love. And that is okay. You know, mm-hmm. I stopped feeling guilty that I didn't give birth to them and I didn't know them up until they were 7 and 3, you know, mm-hmm. because that's just how it was meant to be. And so, you know, admittedly, there is a different connection that you have with children that you've given birth to, but love is love and it's not one size fits all. And it's, you know, you can grow to love someone and you love them for different reasons and you love, you know, their qualities. And you just, you know, you love them no matter what. Mm-hmm. And it is different, but I think that I was feeling more awkward about it than the children were just because I was so, you know, worried about them not, you know, worried about if they didn't feel loved enough or something, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. resenting that, you know, now I was their mom and, you know, that I wasn't the mom that they wanted or needed or wished they had. And you know what? I just finally had to decide, you know what? I love these kids and whether or not I gave birth to them, they are mine. And that is how I'm choosing to view it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, let's take a really quick break for our sponsor and then come back and talk about things you're learning now. You know, you've blended your family, but what's happening in your life now? And I know, Lisa, you have a great story about, you know, burnout and then finding yourself again because you gave a lot for all of those kids. So we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. So Lisa, let's hear more about, you know, you put all that pressure on yourself to show equal love and be a good mom for everyone. And what was the journey like for you to let go of all of that pressure and start taking care of you in the process as well?
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, obviously going through that tragedy, the whole loss and having your life just turned upside down and changing so drastically, you know, things are not what you were used to them being. You kind of get, you know, into a normal routine and then all of a sudden one day you wake up and everything has changed. That is huge. And that is what had happened. I had a career and I was a mom and I was a wife. And then all of a sudden one day I'm a widowed single mom, still trying to have a career. And I love my career. I loved my career. But then, you know, after everything happened and Scott and I blended families, I just knew that it was my calling to, you know, put my career on hold and focus on our family. And that was what my purpose was at that time. And I was fine with that. And I, you know, I enjoyed it. I missed my career, but I enjoyed, you know, that time that I was able to have just to get acclimated to our life the way that we found it to be at that point. And I was fine with that. You know, here I went from a mom of one to a mom of four in less than a year. And so it was overwhelming to say the least, but it was a good challenge. You know, I like a good challenge every now and again. Mm-hmm. So it was a good challenge. And, you know, I feel like I've always kind of placed this standard to myself and almost to the level of perfectionism. So I felt like I needed to be the perfect mom. I needed to be the perfect wife and to make sure that I was just doing this awesome job and everyone was happy and I wasn't doing it. I did not enjoy it. I joke that I gave up my career to be a domestic goddess. And then I'm like, yeah, it's nowhere near God. Goddess. No, being a stay-at-home mom is not goddess status. It wasn't for me anyway. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought I was just always, whatever I did, I had to be the best at it. I had to do, you know, this amazing job. Well, I wasn't doing an amazing job. And I decided, you know what, it's okay. You know, so I'm not a great stay-at-home mom. You know, I just really had to then evaluate what was going to make me a better mom, what was going to make me a better wife. And so I went back to work part-time. And that was great because I enjoyed that, you know, and so I kind of now have the best of both worlds. I get to be that stay-at-home mom and be involved in my children's activities and, you know, schedule things for them and be available. And then, you know, I still get to go and work at, you know, my job that I was educated for, that they draw a lot of satisfaction and passionate about. So I kind of have the best of both worlds. But nevertheless, I found myself in a place of just burnout, I think, because I was placing these expectations on myself. And I finally decided that, you know, enough was enough. I was trying to function on an empty cup, and I was not doing a good job. I was just constantly telling myself life is hard, you know, and I'm a horrible mom. I'm a horrible wife. Why does it have to be so hard? We've been through hard. We've seen hard, you know, losing your spouse and all of everything we'd been through. That was hard. Now, why does this have to keep being so hard? And that's just where I was at. I was just like, this is so hard. Life is hard.
Interesting. So you're really stuck. Scott, what did you notice in Lisa during this, you know, phase? It probably went on for a while, but what were your thoughts, or what did you feel like would help her at that time before she's, you know, shifted things a little bit?
I guess I just, I was supportive for her finding, you know, things that made her happy. And, you know, of course the kids were and stuff, but you could see that it takes a lot of work. And then, you know, keeping the house in certain way, you know, that's little stuff. I mean, we finally all agreed that, you know, we would much rather have a home that looked like it was lived in than had looked like a maid had to be picking it up every day or something. And so lined up on that kind of stuff. But yeah, you know, you could tell with, you know, her position that she had before she moved back here to Hayes and we started our lives together, you know, it was important. And that relationship with patients and things like that. And so, and, you know, even in our lives, she's a caregiver. So she, you know, needed that. And so just providing support with that. And that's helped. And
awesome. And so, Lisa, you went back to work. How did that start helping you feel better about, you know, those little phrases you told yourself? Life is hard. I'm a horrible mom. I'm a horrible wife. Or what else helped you stop thinking like that?
You know, I think just finally realizing that I am not the only one in the world that feels that way, that, you know, I started to surround myself with other women that we could support each other and tell each other, you know, that's okay. I felt like that too, or I feel like that too. And I have the best coworkers. I mean, I love my coworkers, and, you know, they would be supportive of me in that as well. And, you know, say that, yeah, we love our job too. And we wouldn't be able to be a stay-at-home mom. And it's your personal choice. It's whatever works, you know, whatever makes you happy and whatever works. But, you know, just feeling that separation from I'm doing this thing that I don't think I'm good at. You know, and I'm not saying I'm not. I mean, I think I do fine, but I had allowed myself to convince myself that I was not doing good at it, that I was failing, you know, whether it be because, you know, my house wasn't picked up or clean or my kids were misbehaving. That was what was contributing to my feelings of failure, you know, and I have always felt like I was good at my job. And so I hear I could go to my, you know, job and feel that satisfaction that I was helping someone and I was doing a good job. And, you know, I'm a words of affirmation person. So, and I am a social person, and, you know, to be around people and patients and have them express their appreciation to me and have my coworkers express their appreciation to me, that was filling my cup, you know? So then that was making me feel better, to where then I could come back home and I could, you know, I could then do that, turn around and do that for my family.
That's so cool. And yeah, a lot of times moms don't get those words of affirmation, and certainly not always that social piece.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, so I guess what are the biggest lessons you guys have learned in the last year or two, just from life in general, the ways you're growing now as people and as a couple?
You know, I think that something that I just really try and focus on is gratitude and just being thankful and, you know, practicing gratitude and consciously choosing to see the good and find the joy and focus on those things that you love or that bring you that happiness. And, you know, another thing is just love in general. You know, I mean, if you view people or circumstances, you know, in a loving way, it can just totally shift your perspective. You know, whereas if you're going to shift things, you know, fearfully, or view things fearfully, or view things in a negative light, that's how you're going to feel. And I think just, you know, trying to see the good and not be perfect and know that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to have tough times. It's okay to still have struggles and just, you know, be in those struggles, allow them to pass and move on, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the greatest things I've learned lately is to feel it, not try to minimize your feelings, just accept them and deal with them. And then, you know, turn around and find something that you're grateful for. And that has really helped me, I think.
How about you, Scott?
Lisa and I, we've talked about this and frequently, even over the past year or so now, that you kind of get stuck into a routine of believing you can control things that you obviously can't. And we had those struggles and challenges previous life that we, you know, didn't have control over. And we kind of, I don't know, as our life moved on, we kind of lost that again. And I think now we've kind of started that again. I think, you know, even the last couple of months, and then I've expressed how much happiness there is in our home when we focus on the joy of the others that's going on, like Lisa's launch of her book, you know, focusing on that joy. It changes the energy of all of us. Or even when your children succeed in something and focusing on that energy instead of focusing on something so negative, that our family seems to be meshed together so much now that we feed off of each other's energy. And it's like, you know, if one is down, it's all of us are down. Mm-hmm. And so we try to focus on finding those ones, you know, lifting them up, going, hey, that was all, you know, we all feed off of that. Put less focus on our struggles than the things that we can't control. And so.
Oh, I love that. So focus on the good things and then you feed off of that.
Yeah.
That's great. Great. Well, let's talk about some of your favorite things. So, Scott, what's your favorite book?
Well, I was asked this question last night and then I just threw it out there. But I like The Journey Between Us is probably my favorite right now.
Good answer. That's Lisa's book, everyone. The Journey Between Us. Yeah. Well, so what's your favorite part of Lisa's book, Scott?
Oh, besides the parts about me? you know, there's so many parts to that. And, you know, it says so much about the things that we were going through. And, you know, there's so many things that we didn't touch at the beginning. You know, the having a child together, I mean, that's a big part of us now. And I didn't realize how more important our lives together were after we had Lacey. And, you know, it's just, and the struggle to that, the scares of that with Lisa's health and the, you know, not even knowing if we were going to even be able to have Lacey. And so, you know, and then the joys after that, you know, those things that we couldn't control, you know, they weren't even an issue. And that was a big joy. So, yeah, I mean, there's so many parts that I couldn't even pull one thing out because, I mean, the whole thing has just been a joy. And I've read other books. Well, I do have a stack that I get through about halfway through them and then I lose interest. So there is a big pile on one side of my bed.
But, oh, that's
funny. But I like, you know, one thing about Lisa's brought into my life, and that is faith. I had a hard struggle with that. You know, how could I be going through all this and has, you know, and faith with God and my Lord. And she brought our whole family to that. You know, the kids are so involved with that stuff. And so it's a blessing. But, you know, I read a book not too long ago and had, you know, I had different pieces to, you know, write into it yourself. And that was a Stop Behaving by Jared Lopez. I liked that book. I related well to it. And it kind of, you know, and letting God take a little more control of those things that I'm trying to control. And so, but yeah, those are, it's kind of where I've been at.
Awesome. How about you, Lisa? Favorite book?
I tell you, there again, you know me and favorites. It's like I never can just have one favorite. And so, you know, I have read so many books this past year. I think I've read more books this past year than I've probably ever read in my life. And I think it was just because I've been on such a journey of trying to find myself and feel better about myself and my purpose in life. But, you know, I feel like it depends on which hat I'm wearing at the time of what the book is I'm reading. So I read books either as a parent standpoint, as a woman standpoint, as a wife standpoint. And so I kind of have favorites in all those categories, unfortunately. So it's hard to narrow it down. But I will say that The Child Whisperer by Carol Tuttle is a book that I read most recently about children and their different energy types. And it is probably the most fascinating, book that I have ever read because of having five kids, obviously, and each energy type that she talks about in that book is represented in my home. And so it was just very fascinating to read about that. So anybody with kids, works with kids, actually anybody who's even human and interacts with other humans should read The Child Whisperer because it is so interesting. But then from the standpoint of anyone, men or women, I read The Big Leap by Gay Hendricks, and it was an amazing book too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think those two just really stand out to me. I mean, I have a whole list of favorite books, but I think as far as impacting me the most in my journey this past year, I would say that those two books are my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you. We'll have links to those on our show notes page. And you can check that out at jenratty.com and then / the episode number. So what's your favorite easy meal, Lisa?
This is a great question because I'm all about easy meals. I have decided that anything that you can put in a tortilla is a great meal. I like to make tortilla pizzas or pizza quesadillas, either one, whichever the mood strikes me. And my kids love these too, because they're, you know, they can make whatever they want. You know, we put out a tortilla and I put out the sauce and then all the various topics, and everyone can make whatever they want. And you can make them on the healthier side of the spectrum. You can make them on the, you know, pepperoni and cheese side of the spectrum, but they're very, you know, easy. And then we just throw them in the oven and they're just quick. And so I just always keep everything on hand that we can make pizza quesadillas whenever, or tortilla pizzas whenever. Mm-hmm. So
easy.
Yeah.
So what about life hacks? Scott, do you have a favorite life hack? Something that a little trick you have or do or think that helps you in life, maybe might benefit someone else?
I don't know. I got to get away, and I like to find workout routines that are just a little challenging. They kind of make you, you know, makes you feel like you're going to fall and not be able to stand up. And if I can complete it and I'm still standing there and able to walk out of the gym, it just, I don't know, makes me feel good. It was challenging and I made it through it. And I guess that's just how I need to view life too, in a way. But so it usually makes me feel a lot better when I get to accomplish something like that.
Good for you. And Lisa, you work out as well, right?
Yes, yes.
Do you work out together or do you have different times you do it?
You know, sometimes we do and we enjoy that. But with our schedules, it really doesn't really work very often for us to do that. Mm-hmm. That, and he's so competitive. Like he, you know, he's always making sure that, you know, I'm lifting the proper weight and the proper form and all this. And so it, you know, and so I don't like to be supervised.
I say she breaks my concentration.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's
but
funny.
No, we, yeah, we both really. And that's how we kind of got into working out so regularly, is we booked this beach vacation to Mexico a couple of years ago. And we decided that we wanted to get in great shape for that. And so we did kind of hold each other accountable and we've just kept with it. It's a great stress reliever and it, you know, helps us feel better about ourselves, get those endorphins moving. And and yeah, so.
Awesome. Good for you. Both of you. I know, Lisa, you're so fit and you like to wear your gym clothes. Well, Lisa's been one of my Heal Your Heart students this year. And so that's how I know this, because we meet over video and she always shows up in her gym clothes. So I always think, oh man, she's so fit. I want to be like Lisa.
Oh gosh, no. You only see about 2 inches of me on a screen though.
But anyway, good for you. What about your favorite kitchen gadget, Lisa?
Oh, this is a funny one. So if anybody's familiar with Pampered Chef, I love this little tool called the Mix and Chop. And it's kind of a little tool that I can use to take out my regret or aggression sometimes. If I'm feeling just a little bit stressed, I'll make something that requires browned hamburger. And I will use this tool. And what it does is it chops up the meat while it's browning and makes it really fine. And so sometimes I'll be standing and my kids and my husband can tell when mom's been a little stressed because I'm making something with the Mix and Chop and I'm just like chopping away at the hamburger.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I have two. I keep two on hand at all times and I've broken a couple. And so they had to be replaced. But yeah, yeah.
That's when you know you just need to leave. Just leave. Yeah.
She's chopping.
She's using the mix and chop, but yeah, no, it's my favorite kitchen gadget. That and my KitchenAid mixer. I would be lost without it.
Yeah, yeah. I have a mix and chop. I didn't know that's what it was called, but I do have one.
Yeah.
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 Cool.
Yeah, it's great for taking out aggression. Yeah.
So let's go to our final big question that I love about the happiness formula, or being a vibrant and happy woman slash man for you, Scott, too. But and then we'll have a challenge. So, Scott, what does it mean for you to be the most vibrant and happy version of yourself? How are you doing that and getting better at that?
Oh, wow. Probably just, you know, communicating with my spouse, communicating with my children. I usually like to just contain things in, you know, just get in my own space. And I've noticed that the more I just kind of sit and communicate and then also listen at the same time, it helps me. I, you know, build a better relationship with everybody around me. And, you know, that's a goal of mine. And so, but yeah.
Nice. Awesome. How about you, Lisa? What does it mean for you to be a vibrant, happy woman?
I think just, you know, keeping love at the center of everything that I do. And, you know, I love to interact with other women and other people. And I love to do things for people, you know, to try to encourage them and make them happy. And that in turn makes me happy. But this last year, I've also learned that in order to be a vibrant, happy woman, you have to love yourself and you have to do some things for yourself that fill your own cup. And so I think that loving yourself and accepting yourself for who you are and being grateful for that and wanting to set that example and be that light for others is what helps me to be a vibrant, happy woman.
Awesome. So you said you have to love yourself and do things that fill your own cup. So that's easier said than done. So how have you, you know, learned to do that without guilt?
Right. Well, I just know that it makes me a better person. And I learned a long time ago that guilt is an emotion that is not healthy and that we just need to realize that we can be better wives, we can be better mothers, we can be better friends if we take care of ourselves and not feel guilty about that. And it just becomes a mindset. It has to become your perspective and how you look at it. And I just know that if I do something for myself, it makes me happy. And then when I'm happy, those around me are happy. And so I just have made the conscious choice to not feel guilty about that. And it's really shifted, like Scott mentioned, the energy of those around me, especially in my own home.
That's awesome. So Lisa, I mentioned you're one of the Heal Your Heart students in my Heal Your Heart program. And we talk a lot about all these topics. So I'm so excited to hear they're really integrated into your thinking. But share a few thoughts about what you've learned through that program and how it's helped you with this process or the women that you've met there.
Oh my gosh. The Heal Your Heart program and the women that I've met have just changed my life. You know, I've talked about my struggles and I've talked about where I was in a place of just feeling like I was burned out, like I was failing at everything, like I was questioning my purpose. And, you know, I think the thing that I've noticed first off is that amongst the Heal Your Heart women, none of us feel alone anymore. We all felt like we were going through those same feelings. And now we just know that we're not alone. And we are learning these tools that we can use from the lessons that, you know, help us, and that we're just there to love and support each other no matter what. I mean, we have developed such amazing friendships just in, you know, the last few months of being in this group. And we all kind of accept one another. There's no judgment. We feel like we can be completely vulnerable, which I think has been a huge change and shift in my life, is because I think so often we get to a place where we are embarrassed or we're fearful of being judged. And so we don't share what our struggles are. And through this group and through this group of women, we have learned that is not necessary, that you should be able to feel and share and not be judged and feel supported. And that is how we grow. And that is how we change. That is how we shift, is by being vulnerable and opening up and having that love and support. And that's what I've received from being involved in Heal Your Heart.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that.
Sure.
So, Scott, let's have a challenge from you to our listeners from the male perspective, the supporter of a woman, or for anyone who's listening. But I know most of our listeners are women, so.
I guess. I mean, if I was to challenge most men, one realization that I had in the last couple of weeks is, you know, to be, you know, supportive for your spouse, to, you know, find that thing that they're joyful about and just, you know, be there along, you know, even if you're kind of struggling maybe that day or something, you know, your energy will increase if you are just there for them. And I expressed that to her the other day when, you know, we had an awesome week and it was mostly just she was feeding all of us that. And that was because we were focused on, you know, the one person that had a lot of positive energy and, you know, and it kind of changed all of our days. So,
oh, that's great. And, so that saying's true. If mom's happy, everyone's happy. If mom ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Right.
It goes for a lot. It goes for our children too. You know, if we're focused, you know, around the table and we try to, you know, stress that to our children. If one's sitting there joking around, you know, not don't try it, or they're having a good time, you know, one's a little grumpy, you know, you'll usually get somebody that's, you know, trying to bring down the other person. But mm-hmm. we try to point that out, you know, that positive energy, mm-hmm. you know, feed off mm-hmm. of that. Go do something too that's positive for yourself, you know.
Nice.
Fill your cup, you know, like Lisa says.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Okay, how about you, Lisa? A challenge to our listeners and then we'll say goodbye.
You know, I'm going to share the challenge that I've had for myself this past week. And that is, if I'm faced with a difficult situation or a difficult person or, you know, someone in my life is doing something that's frustrating to me, I try shifting the way that I view them. Instead of viewing them in frustration or, you know, a negative emotion, I try to just look at them with love. And I choose one positive, just one positive thing that I love about that person. And I feel the frustration just kind of melt away. You know, maybe it's something your kids did or something your husband did, you know, just pause and consciously choose to look at them and recognize just one thing that you love about them. That's my challenge.
Thanks, Lisa. And I want to thank you both for being on the show. This was fantastic. Your story is beautiful. I love hearing how you're moving forward even today. And thank you so much for being on the show, Scott and Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jen.
Amazing story, right? To think that they both experienced the greatest tragedy of their lives and then magically, amazingly found each other and built something from the ashes, like the phoenix from the ashes. They have this great relationship. They are working every day on seeing the good and building further joy in their lives. So I love Lisa and Scott. Love you too, man. Even though I haven't met Scott. Lisa is a member of my Heal Your Heart program, and she has become one of my dear friends. She even is on my Gen Ready team now and helps me with the Vibrant Happy Women Club. So Lisa, thank you so much for letting me interview you. Now, remember, that self-love video training that I created is available now. And if you haven't seen the first video, you need to go watch it. It's all about building that foundation of self-love, which leads to a healthier body, way healthier relationships, and then being able to show up and live your purpose with confidence because you feel it from the inside out. You know you have worth and value and gifts and talents, and you are here on this earth to share that goodness, to make a difference, not only in your families, but in your communities, at work, in your career, whatever you're going to do. And the best part about that is when you love yourself, when you heal your heart from those past hurts and those resentments and those grudges, you let a little more light in, let a little more goodness into your life, and then you can radiate even more of that love and light to those around you. And that is what this Vibrant Happy Women movement is all about. So definitely go watch my video. It is pre-recorded and you can access that at jenride.com/loveyourself. It is the first video in a 3-part series and the second video is coming later this week. Just go to jenride.com/loveyourself to watch that and to sign up to get notified when the next one is available. Well, my friends, I thank you so much for listening. Thank you for showing up and striving to be the best you, to grab your happiness and ride that happiness trail, pulling back on my analogy from the intro, and choosing your best life, a life of positivity, joy, vulnerability, authenticity, all of the good things. I appreciate you all so much, sending you my love. And please watch that video. Let me know on my Facebook page what you think, or let me know on Instagram, DM me, private message me, whatever. I want to know what you think of the video. What would it look like in your life to apply some of that blueprint that I'm talking about, that journey of healing your heart and building self-love? You can watch that video. It won't be available forever, but it is there now at jenridey.com/loveyourself. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back later this week with a happy bit. And until then, make it a vibrant, happy week. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Vibrant Happy Women podcast at www.jenridey.com.